Good evening, everybody. I'm going to call the meeting to order. 6:02 by my watch. Couple minutes late here. Up first, introductions. We've got one new member, newer member. But actually, Jamie, you want to?
Sure. Jamie Thornsbury, board member.
Since when?
Oh, don't do that. I don't know. 6 months or so?
Okay.
Is that right?
Sounds good.
Okay.
Hey, and I'm Denise Blazek, and this is my second meeting, so I'm very new.
Stephen Jeffrey, I was appointed, just recently reappointed, the end of October.
Stephanie Coleman, I was reappointed as well.
Doug Hunt, and I've been on since spring sometime. Don't ask me for the month.
Rose Wibbenmeyer, staff liaison.
I'm Sergeant German with training and recruiting.
Thank you.
I'm Brandon Holtz. I'm filling in for Sergeant Ray tonight. I'm an investigator with Internal Affairs.
Thank you. I kind of get a motion to approve the agenda.
So moved.
A second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Any opposed? All right. And did we get a chance to look at the previous minutes?
Yeah.
November.
Yes.
They all look good?
Actually, there's one slight amendment I would like to make to the, and this is trivial in a sense, but so I'm drawing it largely to Rose's attention. Under general comments from the public and the board, which I think was your section 8, there's a sentence that says, Doug Hunt and Reese Ellis commented about police chief training. I think that's a misunderstanding of what happened. I think we were actually talking about our time on the selection board, which was mentioned earlier. So if just striking that sentence would make the minutes more accurate.
Do we need to vote on that, Rose?
Give me a minute. I would like to amend general.
Since it says Doug Hunt and Reese Ellis commented about police chief training, I have no idea what that would even mean. So,
yeah. That's wrong. So then there would be a motion to approve the minutes.
And I'm going to abstain because I was not present at the last meeting. But that said, do I have a motion to approve the?
I make a motion. We approve.
Okay.
Amended minutes.
Amended minutes. Okay. Do I have a second?
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any
Aye.
Opposed? And I'm abstaining.
And I'll move the approval of the closed meeting minutes draft.
And second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And Rose, I'll abstain again. Okay, so on to section 5 here, special items, de-escalation training. Sergeant?
I'll take it from there. Can yes. everybody hear me? And am I close enough to the microphone? Perfect. So I have to have a little couple caveats before we start. One, this is a continuing education class, okay? So this is about a one-hour block of instruction that we give during our in-service training. It's not meant to be comprehensive. It's just essentially CEUs. So we're working on the foundation that people have a basic understanding of de-escalation. And if they want additional training, there's several training opportunities that they can go to. But this training was designed for law enforcement officers. So with that being said, part of my objectives that you guys will see later is that it encourages audience participation. Obviously, I'm not gonna ask you guys to participate. You're welcome if you want to, but it's gonna be just a little bit different given the audience that I have. And the fact that it's recorded, I don't want anything taken out of context. And just know that every time, depending on the audience, it's a little different. Again, this is the 1 hour of post-mandated training. For those of you that aren't aware, POST is our police officer standards and training. They require 24 hours of continuing education, and our policy says that we will meet or exceed those standards. Making sure I have note cards. I don't usually use note cards, but I also usually am a walker, so it's a little awkward just to be sitting here, but I'll do my best to be comfortable. A little bit about myself. So I started at CPD in 2008. I was fresh out of college. I am local, born and raised here in Columbia. I went to Columbia College and received a bachelor's in criminal justice as well as psychology. During my time in the Columbia Police Department, I worked on the downtown unit when we had one. I have been an FTO. I worked on the mounted unit. I've been crisis intervention trained since 2013. I received follow-up training in that as well. I am on the peer support team, and I am the leader of the crisis negotiation unit. I've been on that team since 2018, and I recently received my certification of something that says I have 120 hours that I've been to level one, level two, and level three of negotiation school. So these are our objectives. Officers will be able to explain the behavioral staircase model and how to use it in de-escalation. Officers will list active listening skills and provide examples and phrases to use in verbal conflict. So no matter what audience I'm presenting to, I have to meet these objectives. Whether it's detectives, whether it's first-year officers, whether it's seasoned officers, they have to be able to do these things. Again, it's based on participation, so it's going to be a little difficult, but we'll work with it. So safety first. This one's pretty obvious. Per our policy, we are not required, we should use de-escalation, but if somebody is physically assaulting us and it's not safe for officers to use de-escalation, there's a time and place for everything, right? And we don't want officers to think that every single situation is a time to de-escalate. While many of them are, we don't want that to be their only option. So when somebody's in crisis and somebody is having an issue, we want to know who's in control. Okay, so I asked the class, who is in control? Are you in control of this, or is the person that you're trying to de-escalate in control? And then I have them raise their hands, and usually half the class says, well, I'm in control, I get to decide how this pans out, and the other class says, well, they're in control. And that's 100% correct, okay? No matter what you do as a law enforcement officer, it is ultimately that person's decision whether or not they're going to comply. You can do everything, but sometimes due to alcohol, drugs, mental illness, sometimes people are not going to de-escalate. So with that being said, what can you control? If you're in one of these confrontations and somebody's in a crisis state, what can you do to maintain your professionalism? And it's know your triggers. When I started as a police officer, one of my triggers was that people said, you know, you only became a police officer because you dropped out of high school and you were uneducated. And I took that personally. It made me upset. It would completely change the tone of the conversation. It would turn into adversarial because that really bothered me. As I've matured as a person, as I've matured as a law enforcement officer, it doesn't bother me anymore. I tell my recruits when I was still training recruits, like, you are literally going to get called every name in the book. You have to have thick skin. People know when something bothers you, and they're going to use that to try and steer the conversation in a way that it doesn't need to go. Also, talk low and slow. So that's a negotiation phrase that we use. My sister's a first grade teacher, and when she has kids that are yelling and screaming, she keeps her voice low, right? You want people to have to strain to be able to hear what you're saying. If they're yelling, try and see how soft you can talk, just to try and get that hook in so that they'll listen to you. Phone a friend. So oftentimes we have coworkers who maybe they've had a rough day. Maybe they have issues at home. Maybe they went to a rough call. For whatever reason, they are struggling that day. Help your friend out. If you see that somebody is struggling to communicate with somebody, if for some reason one of our people that we're interacting with just particularly doesn't like Brandon here, and every time Brandon comes in the room, there's a confrontation, then I'm going to say, hey, Brandon, let me handle this. It'll save your career. It'll save his career. And lean on each other. Don't take offense if you get tapped out of one of these confrontations. Also, let them say what they want as long as they're doing what you need. If you're telling somebody to leave the property and they're yelling at you and they're cussing at you and they're saying all the horrible, awful things you've ever said, as long as they're walking to the door, let them keep walking. So this is my friend, the Behavioral Staircase Change Model. It was developed by the FBI, and it's a common thing that negotiators use. So when I was developing this curriculum, I thought to myself, what can I teach people? What solid tool set can I teach people in an hour to help them relate to people and de-escalate? So I fell back on my negotiator training. As police officers, we often assume that we have influence. By virtue of being the police, we come and we give people orders and they listen. Doesn't necessarily work for people that are in a crisis state. So that's what the FBI started this, and it's a process. The good thing about this process is that time is on our side, okay? It takes a while to complete it. Oftentimes when people, it takes a lot of energy to be angry. Oh, that's earlier. So what do we know about a staircase? So you can go up a staircase and you can go down a staircase. If you try and skip steps, it's not going to work out so well, right? Like you can't start at the bottom step and automatically go to the top. All of these people had some issues getting down the steps, but you can go up it and you can go down it. So the same thing applies to this behavioral change staircase. You start out with active listening, and then you work your way up the staircase step by step. You can't go from active listening to behavioral change and expect it to work. It's very much not a negotiation, but it's a process, okay? And it works best if you take all of the steps one at a time. So oftentimes, our patrol officers, it's no secret, we are understaffed and their call volume is very, very high. So lots of times they'll say, well, I don't have time for this. Kim, you're giving me this model. There's five steps in it. This is going to take a while. I don't have time for this. My answer to that is you take as much time as that person's life is worth. Okay? It takes as much time as it takes. The beauty is that people, when they're in a crisis state, when they're highly elevated, they can't maintain that crisis state for a long time. Once you let people vent, once you let people blow off some steam, then most likely they're going to come back down. The example that I'm going to use throughout this is a wrong order at a fast food restaurant, okay? Something that everybody's happened. I'm a person that if I'm hangry, I turn into a completely different person. So I feel like that's something that people can really, really relate to. While that is a minor crisis on the sort of crises that our police officers deal with every day, it's a very easy example to use. The other thing that we talk about when officers say, I don't have time for this, think about a SWAT call out, right? Think about somebody, our SWAT team, who is highly trained going in and serving warrants. They use time on their side, right? The last thing that they want to do is go into that house and get somebody. That's dangerous for the person. That's dangerous for our SWAT operators. So we try lots of different things, and oftentimes those are hour-long standoffs. Time is on our side, okay? Sometimes when nothing's happening, that's a good thing. So take all of the time that you need. So the first step of that staircase model is active listening. The mnemonic that we like to use in negotiation is more pies. So if you look at all of those listed active listening skills, the first letters spell more pies. I'm going to go into each one of these in somewhat detail, but it was amazing at some point in my negotiation journey when I learned like half of negotiation is just listening. People generally assume like I'm a good listener, right? I've been listening my whole life. But when you actually get down to the nitty gritty of what does it mean to listen? What does it mean to show people you're listening? It's really not as easy as it would seem. The first rule of negotiation is that you seek first to understand. Okay, if somebody's in crisis, you don't want to just automatically go in and demand they do something, right? You have to follow the model. You have to start with listening. You have to use empathy. And we say seek first to understand. How do you understand? By listening. So minimal encouragers. These can be verbal or nonverbal. Some of you guys are nodding your head, making good eye contact. All of those things indicate to me that you're listening. Things like uh-huh, okay, right, go on, I'm listening. everything to show that person that you're invested in the conversation and that you're actually listening to them. If you're just sitting there with an absolute glazed over, thinking about what your next meal is, people are going to realize that you're not talking or that you're not listening to what they're saying. The next is open-ended questions. So oftentimes, I think there's this perception of police officers that when they interrogate somebody, they ask this long string of yes or no questions. That's not what we need to be doing in active listening. Ask open-ended questions. If you say yes or no, that's all you're going to get is yes or no, and you're not seeking to understand. Don't ask why, right? If a person is in a crisis, they probably don't know why they're in that crisis. And so when you use that confrontational language, you're not seeking to understand. You might be bringing in judgment. So just be careful with that. Reflection or mirroring. You'll see there that that's a core concept. The FBI chose four of these that they said that these are really, really important concepts for you to understand. And the other ones are just kind of ancillary things that you can use as necessary. So reflection or mirroring is basically the gist. So I understand what you're saying. So if somebody says they're at a restaurant and they say, hey, I've got an appointment in 5 minutes. I only ordered a large fry because I've got somewhere to be. You give them a why. As a manager, you say, hey, I understand that you have a meeting coming up. I want you to know that your fries will be ready in 1.5 minutes. Okay, so you reflect back to them that you understand what they've said. You understand why it's a crisis and what you're going to do to fix it. And again, I know that these are really rudimentary examples, but they're easy to use. Another thing is control your reaction to what you say, what people say. As law enforcement officers, a lot of times when we go to these crisis scenes, people have had very, very traumatic incidents. You don't want to show on your face that you're aghast. You don't want to show on your face that that's awful. Just really, really keep your cool. Don't let people know that that might bother you. Do the same body language. When you're connecting with people, oftentimes you want to see that your hands are open up, show me where your hands are, just as kind of open body language so that they'll communicate with you. If they're sitting there with their arms crossed, maybe you mirror that image, okay? They're sitting back and their arms are crossed and they're kind of giving the message, I don't like you. It's amazing if you do this, it works. When I look at somebody and their arms are crossed and I'll cross my arms, or if I realize I'm crossing my arms, I'll uncross my arms, but this is really, really powerful stuff. Emotional labeling. So what we have here is an emotion wheel. I have this for my negotiators so that they can better understand what sort of core emotions that people are using. So if somebody says, I don't feel respected, it could be that they're wanting to be loved. But just breaking it down to kind of figure out where they are. You identify the feeling, because when they're in a crisis state, they may not understand what feeling they're feeling. They may feel like they're angry, but they don't think they're angry, they think they're sad. And when you as the listener identify that emotion for them, it kind of helps clarify their train of thought and gets them more in the moment. One of the things that you caution is, well, what if I get it wrong? What if I incorrectly identify their emotion? They'll tell you, right? You can say, hey, you sound really scared. I'm not scared, I'm mad. And then you use that to even more rapport building, because again, you're showing that you're attempting to understand where they're coming from. Paraphrasing, again, is another core concept. Put what they're saying into your own words, and it's not a summary. A lot of times, when people are upset, they don't realize that maybe that isn't that big of a deal until you repeat it back to them, right? So if somebody says their wife was served a regular Coke, she was supposed to be served a normal Coke because they're diabetic, you say, hey, you know, I'm really sorry. That must have been really scary when your wife drank that. Can I call some paramedics? Can I help you out? And just identify the emotion, figure out why they would be angry, figure out why they're justifiably angry, and go on from there. iMessages, disclosure of something personal to develop rapport, used when the subject is verbally attacking the negotiator. So again, you want to make this, instead of a us versus you, you want to make it into a, hey, I'm going to disclose something about myself so that maybe you feel a little closer to me, so that we can build on that rapport, so that we can build on that empathy, and get that in-group versus out-group kind of thing going. Effective pauses. I don't know how many of you are children of the 90s, but about half of the people get that and chuckle, but some of them don't. So a deliberate pause before or after a meaningful message. It's really, really impactful when you say something and then let the person digest it, right? You're supposed to be the one listening. And so when you offer a solution or when you say something that should be impactful, stop. If they're having a problem disclosing things, or if they're having a problem engaging in conversation, see how long that you can stretch out that pause, because people are naturally wanting to fill that in. And it really, really works. Summary, this is very, very much like paraphrasing. But again, we're repeating back both the content and the emotion. It may be something, like I said, when you repeat their words back to them, after they get out of that crisis state, after they've vented, they realize, you know, maybe this isn't the big deal that I was making it out to be. So I like to use this. Dr. George Thompson developed verbal judo, and some of his stuff I'm not a real big fan of. But I really, really, really like these five universal truths. Cops, because of a lot of the things they've seen, they struggle to connect with people, and they struggle to have that empathetic heart. So when we talk about these universal truths, that people want to be treated with dignity and respect. It doesn't matter who you're dealing with. Nobody grows up and says, I want to have a mental illness. Nobody grows up and says, I want to be a drug addict. Everybody deserves dignity, okay? Nobody grows up and says, I want to be unhoused. So respect those people. Just know that they didn't choose that life, and that, you know, that's not what they thought that they were going to do. Also, people want to be asked rather than told to do something. Give everybody a chance to comply. Don't just shout out orders. Give them a chance. Again, the why. We talk a lot about this in management and newer generations, that people want to know a reason why they're being asked to do what they're being asked to do. And saying, for my safety, doesn't make any sense, right? Explain to people, hey, when you come out of the house, you're going to be put in handcuffs, okay? You've made some pretty serious threats. We have information that you might be armed. It's our policy or not that we handcuff you. But just explain why. Tell people the why, and you will get a lot more compliance. Again, people want to be given options rather than threats. Thankfully, it seems like we've moved past this as a profession. Do as I say or I'll take you to jail is not really something that we're going to be saying or doing anymore. And also that people want to be given a second chance. Most of the people that we're dealing with have made a mistake, okay? Or they're a victim of a crime. It's not their finest moment. So give them a chance. Give them a second chance. Maybe you saw them on a bad day. If you're working a car accident, somebody's going to be stressed, okay? Somebody's going to be upset. And that's not going to be the same person that you meet in the gas station getting a coffee. So give people a second chance. Okay, and this is the point where I show a video. Like I said, this video has some things in it that would be very appropriate to show police officers. Have any of you seen The Joker, the movie? Is anybody uncomfortable watching this clip? I will stop it before anything grossly violent happens.
Killed those three Wall Street guys.
Okay, I'm waiting for the punchline.
There's no punchline. It's not a joke.
You're serious, aren't you? You're telling us you killed those three young men on the subway?
Mm-hmm.
And why should we believe you?
I ain't got nothing left to lose. Nothing can hurt me anymore. My life is nothing but a comedy.
Well, let me get this straight. You think that killing those guys is funny?
I do. And I'm tired of pretending it's not. Comedy is subjective, Murray. Isn't that what they say? All of you, the system that knows so much, you decide what's right or wrong the same way that you decide what's funny or not.
Well, okay, I think I might understand that you did this to start a movement, to become a symbol.
Come on, Murray. Do I look like the kind of clown that could start a movement? I killed those guys because they were awful. Everybody is awful these days. It's enough to make anyone crazy.
Okay, so that's it. You're crazy. That's your defense for killing three young men?
No. They couldn't carry a tune to save their lives. Oh, why is everybody so upset about these guys? If it was me dying on the sidewalk, you'd walk right over me. I pass you every day and you don't notice me. But these guys, what, because Thomas Wayne went and cried about them on TV?
You have a problem with Thomas Wayne, too.
Yes, I do. Have you seen what it's like out there, Murray? Do you ever actually leave the studio? Everybody just yells and screams at each other. Nobody's civil anymore. Nobody thinks what it's like to be the other guy. You think men like Thomas Wayne ever think what it's like to be someone like me? To be somebody but themselves? They don't. They think that we'll just sit there and take it like good little boys, that we won't werewolf and go wild.
You finished? I mean, there's so much self-pity, Arthur. You sound like you're making excuses for killing those young men. Not everybody, and I'll tell you this, not everyone is awful.
You're awful, Murray.
Me? I'm awful? Oh, yeah, how am I awful?
Playing my video. Inviting me on the show. You just wanted to make fun of me. You're just like the rest of them.
You don't know the first thing about me, pal. Look what happened because of what you did, what it led to. There were riots out there. Two policemen are in critical condition. You're laughing. You're laughing. Someone was killed today because of what you did.
I know. How about another joke, Murray?
No, I think we've had enough of your jokes.
Okay, so the first question that I ask officers is, let's do a risk assessment, okay? What do we think the Joker's state of functioning is? How dangerous do we think this man is? And usually they correctly assume that he has a propensity to be very dangerous. And I ask him to write down things and I say, so what in the first 30 seconds gives you a motive? What is your first clue that this man is in crisis? The correct answer is, he says, I have nothing left to lose. Nothing can hurt me anymore. As a police officer and as a negotiator, when you start to hear phrases like that, that's when you should really start to realize that the risk and the propensity for violence is going up. Murray uses some good active listening skills at first. He uses paraphrasing and effective pauses. He said, okay, I think I understand. You did this to start a movement, to become a symbol. And then he says, I'll tell you this, not everybody is awful. Again, an I message, kind of. He uses a mirror with the Joker. The Joker says, because Thomas Wayne cried about them on TV, he said, you have a problem with Thomas Wayne too. So at some point, this confrontation goes from Murray being a really good listener to Murray not taking his own pulse and realizing that he's really frustrated with this guy. And he starts ramping him up. Instead of being a good, active listener, he starts being confrontational. And the more confrontational that he gets, the more that the Joker responds, and it ends up very, very poorly. So I use this, again, because I'm not going to use videos of our own citizens. I'm not going to use anything that just I find on the internet. But this is a really good example of active listening skills, somebody in crisis, and what can happen when essentially you stop doing the good things and let somebody get the best of you. The last question I have is a joker somebody you can negotiate with? So I think to some extent he is. I think you have to try and negotiate with him depending on the situation. Are you going to be successful in that? Probably not. But once again, that's something that, you know, that's our job as law enforcement officers is to try and get through to those people. Okay, empathy. So I ask, what's the definition between empathy and sympathy? And somebody tries to give a good example, and they're not exactly wrong, but they're not exactly right. So I'll save you guys and just tell you that the definition of sympathy is feeling sorry for someone, okay? When we see this little guy with the toy, he's like, oh, look, I'm really sad. My toy's broken. And the guy's like, well, that's too bad. Look at your toy. It's broken. You don't have anything to play with. Versus empathy, where it's the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. He's like, my toy's broken. He's like, oh, this is a really cool toy. We're not going to be able to play with it anymore. Another example I use if somebody's down in a dark hole, maybe that's depression, maybe that's something else. It's not helpful to throw a ladder down and stand at the top of the hole and be like, hey, man, that looks cold down there. Looks dark. Here, I'll turn on a light. That'll help you, right? Versus going down the steps with that person in the hole and being like, hey, let's make you a sandwich. Let's turn on the light. Let me help you climb the ladder. And that really, that difference, it's hard for cops, okay? Cops go on calls and they put up an emotional wall. To some extent, they have to because of the trauma that they face. But when you're trying to connect with someone, you have to take down a little bit of that wall and be empathetic to their plight. So again, there's different ways to show empathy. Listen with the goal to understand. Ask with genuine curiosity, right? Like, we all have that person that's talking and talking and talking, and you could care less about, I don't know, cars, types of birds. But try and be invested in that person's life. If it is absolutely something that they love to do is go bird watching, well, guess what? You want to know about the birds that are here in Missouri in December. Be present. Let go of your bias. Refrain from offering unsolicited advice. Again, we have to follow that staircase model. Until we truly understand what their problems are or try and understand what they're going through, we can't really give them a solution. Good eye contact. Acknowledge their feelings, open up about a similar experience, practice mindfulness. This is one of the things that in the peer team we talk a lot about. In the element of full disclosure, I've started doing mindfulness. There are apps, there are YouTube videos, there are guided meditations, and just allowing yourself to get out of that constant fight or flight when you're on the street and becoming grounded will really, really help you be a better person. Accept their opinion, just because that's their truth. If somebody says that they're hallucinating and they see things, you may not see things, but accept that they believe they see those things. If they say something like, you know, I see little green fairies flying. Like, okay, well, I don't see them, but I believe that you see them. Don't try and get involved in that delusion. Be like, oh yeah, look, that one's flying up there, because people are going to call you on that. That's disingenuous, right? But accept that that's their truth. Ask how you can help. Again, we just try and really spell out to these officers what empathy is, what it looks like, how to practice it. And I joke at the beginning of this, I'm like, you know, you can use this in your personal life as well as your professional life. When you become good at these skills, arguments with your wife will be better, you know, things, parenting your children will be better, that these are really skills that you can use everywhere. One of the last steps before you get to behavioral change is rapport. It's when our conversation moves one from a one-sided conversation to a two-sided conversation. So up until this point, you should really be listening And until you have rapport, you can't really try and offer that behavioral change. It's characterized by an increased trust and mutual affinity. So in negotiations, we try and do small ask, right? Like we may not be to the part where we have a suicidal subject drop whatever weapon they're holding and come out and be taken into custody. But we may be able to be like, hey, are you willing to set that knife down on the table? Those small ask, just to kind of test what sort of connection you have with that person. You can accept possible solutions, or you can practice blending, so you meet in the middle, right? Like, you know, they said, well, I'm not going to put this knife down and walk out. Okay, then put that knife on the table. Try and find that common ground. When we use all of these things, again, in-group versus out-group, people want to be liked, and people want to feel part of something. The more that you make it seem like, or the more that you're on that person's team, the more that you're trying to help them through whatever crisis there is, the more they're going to trust you, right? And it's not like, I feel bad for you. It's genuinely like, you know, I can understand how you're in this situation, and let's work on this together. For example, if somebody in the fast food restaurant, if their burger's undercooked, the manager would say something like, you know, I'm really sorry. I have a new grill guy. He didn't understand the standards. To make this up, like, I would be upset if I were you too. To make this up, I'm not only going to issue a refund, but I'm also going to have them remake it. To just kind of make them seem like, you know, we're on the same page. So this gentleman, I asked the class, does anybody know who this is? And a lot of people know, right? And like, how random is that this random guy, a lot of people know. Why is that? Because he has influence, right? Why do people trust their livelihood, their money, their wealth, their income with him? Because he's been there and done that. By his own admission, he was broke, and he used this system, and somehow he convinces people that if your budget for entertainment is $40 a week, you can only go to the movie, but you probably can't buy popcorn, right? People like him, and people trust him because he's been there and he has a set method. So the more that people trust us, the more that we show we can be trusted and that we're there to help them, the more likely they are to believe us, right? He also has genius marketing and all of that, but you get the point. So the final stage is behavioral change. And again, once you realize that you have that influence, once you can get those small ask, then it'll lead to behavioral change. Sometimes that behavioral change is willingly being taken into custody. Some of that behavioral change is just a de-escalation. It really depends on the situation. But this right here, if you're doing this right as a police officer, the next time you encounter that person in a crisis, you're not going to have to start way back down with active listening, right? You're already going to have a rapport. You still need to listen to them, but every time you use this model, you're going to be a little quicker to that behavioral change because you followed the steps. So, final exam. I know you guys prepared long and hard. what I have is I'll ask for 3 volunteers. You guys do not have to do this. But the first volunteer, I say, okay, tell me why you need a vacation. And it's a listening exercise, right? We're supposed to be practicing the skills we have. And so, you know, people are really, really quick, and they can talk forever about why they need a vacation. I set 1 minute time on the clock. And so I'm like, tell me about your vacation. Where are you going? What are you doing? And so they're like, yeah, that was really easy. And so then the next one comes up, and I'm like, okay, you're a travel agent. You need to sell them a vacation. Tell them where you're going to send them. Tell them how much it's going to cost. But really, really sell them this vacation. And they get the exact same amount of time. And usually they do okay. And then the third person, they're the person that really has a challenging activity. They have to convince the chain of command why that person needs a vacation. and it's really interesting to, and some people take a lot of prompting. But it really is an exercise. Like I said, it's really painless. But they use all of their empathy and their rapport and influence. Usually they do pretty well. So this is a study. This is my source document that I used. Does anybody have any questions regarding this training?
How often do officers have to go through the training?
So police officer standards and training, the state says that they have to have 1 hour a year, and as well as our policy.
I believe you said you've created this yourself, so does it have to get approved on some sort of national level, or how does that work?
Well, the post, again, the state licensing agency, you have to submit it at least 30 days between the time of presentation, and they look at it, and they look at, does the training meet the objectives, and is the presenter, is whoever wrote it, qualified to teach it?
There's the annual training, but also people who are getting their initial training, like academy training. What sort of de-escalation training is involved there?
I'm sorry. So, yes, this is the annual training that we do. They do have onboarding training. They do have training in the Law Enforcement Training Institute, and also everyday training, right? Like, people learn on the job. People learn that, oops, I said something I shouldn't have that really made this person mad, or I got in trouble for saying this. It's really an ongoing process. All right. Well, I'm going to go home to my family.
Thank you for your presentation. Oh, one more question.
Oh, so when supervisors are reviewing actions that have occurred with different officers, are they applying the standard then as a is a standard that they hope is the optimum, and are people coached to try and, bring their behavior more toward the model?
Well, yeah, I mean, people do receive remedial training, and it just, I hate to say this, but it really depends on the situation, right? It depends on if that's the officer's first rudeness complaint. It depends on, and just in a rudeness complaint, how do you measure that, right? And that's more Julie's area, but... yeah, we certainly, remedial training is something that if addressed or if recommended, we address.
Any other questions? Seeing none.
Well, are you allowed to take questions from the audience?
It's up to the board.
If we have a question from the audience.
A question from the audience or not.
Sergeant, are you okay with that?
If I can reserve the right to say, I would have to look it up, but go ahead. No, post-standards mandates 1 hour of de-escalation in addition to racial profiling and implicit bias. Correct. No, it's not a mandate.
Yes, you may.
Ever met out of all of the officers who's actually properly when confronted. We all know this year there's talk about HARPOs. That they are not following the de-escalation.
So I'll answer the question I think you're asking, or in part I'll answer that question. post-mandates that we have 1 hour of training. This is the first year that we've been able to do in-service training. We've been doing online training for the past 2 years because of COVID and staffing issues. We have a time budget, okay? This year we had 8 hours of in-service training. Personally, I would love to do a 4-hour block. I would love to do 2 2-hour blocks. We don't have the staffing and we don't have that. It's just not a possibility. Could that be different in the future? Well, that's not my decision. Ms. Jones, I don't see how that's related to this presentation. I'm not internal affairs, I'm not the chain of command, and I can't speak on those matters. Please don't put words in my mouth.
I don't feel like we're doing an interrogation right now. I mean, she just came to present.
And part of what was stated at the beginning was every situation's different. De-escalation does not necessarily apply, given the circumstances, to each and every situation. You may be dealing with somebody that is too far gone, so to speak. I don't know. I don't pretend to know, but...
I do have one question on training. I just wanted, because we were still a little bit confused. So we're going to meet with the new recruits on the 26th. Will they have had, they won't have had your training, right? They'll just have the whatever the academy has.
Correct. So this year's a little different. Because the academy is taking a holiday break, we're going to use those hours that they're not in the academy to start some of the orientation training. So I can't speak to what they have or haven't learned at LETI, but no, they have not received my training yet.
Okay.
Thank you again for your presentation, Sergeant. All right, so any old business to be discussed? Election of officers, any recommendations? Actually, because we're so thinly staffed this evening.
Yeah, I know we put it off last month because I think we were short three people and now we're short four essentially because we don't have our human rights person. I hate to do it, but I feel like we should wait one more meeting.
And I know we went several meetings without a chair for a while.
You can do that. Yeah. Is this by consensus of the board?
Yeah. Everyone in agreement?
I am. I don't
okay.
know.
Okay.
I mean,
is that a voice vote or?
It can be by consensus.
Okay.
Next was the topic of recommendations.
Recommendations in terms of.
Part of the recommendations all had to do with the use of force policy, and I know there was an initial one, and I don't have the wording on it, Rose. You're probably looking at it from Xavier, as I recall, right?
Yes.
Right.
Let me to...
Perhaps we could read that recommendation out and decide whether we're going to endorse it. Would that be...
That'd be great.
You said, in order for there to be accountability... and in efforts to build trust and for the public to be better informed, the Columbia Police Department will be required to release body-worn camera footage of any officer on the scene when policy 300.11.2, administrative leave required, is enacted and when legally possible.
The one comment I would make on seeing it is that and when legally possible is going to be pretty complicated, I suspect, because we're talking about people who are under investigation and perhaps in some cases under criminal investigation. That said, I don't know, I think I would be inclined to vote for this motion, that if it's possible to relieve, if it passes the standard of legal scrutiny that it can be released, I think the department should be releasing it. But I mean, it's a pretty bold step, I'm sure.
Rose, what was the policy again? Policy number 300?
300.11.2, administrative leave required.
Under 11.2, correct?
What I have copied down, 300.11.2.
Yeah. It's a complicated thing to think about. I don't want to put you on the spot, Rose, but you're the best legal eye that we've got here. There's going to be like an encounter that results in a serious physical injury. It's encouraging that the department says you're on administrative leave while we investigate. That's short of an allegation of wrongdoing, I think. Right? In effect, the wording is that their actions resulted in death or serious physical injury. I just don't know. Do we have cases where there is no need for an active investigation or a criminal investigation be released? I just don't know how to think about that.
I think that it's almost always going to be problematic.
Yeah.
When I think Xavier got this from a member of the public who submitted it, and it didn't have the "and when legally possible" language. And I told them you have to have something like that on there, because otherwise you're going to have a conflict between a policy and state law.
This goes to the question of overpromising, so to speak. That is, I would hate to write something into policies and procedures that cannot, in fact, be instituted. And that would be my reservation about it, that if we've got something where there's a, you know, we say we're going to release this footage, but as a practical matter, it's impossible to do so. I hate to see it written into the policy manual, and that's my main concern.
Right, knowing that it cannot be released.
Yeah. I would be reluctant to vote for it without further investigation into that at any rate. I'd like to hear from others about whether that would suggest that we table and consider, or for a while to consider this one, or whether we say, no, we're going to not vote for that recommendation, not going to endorse that recommendation.
Thoughts? Anyone other than Doug on this? I mean, I feel a little, just given the lack of attendance that we have here today, and plus Xavier, given the fact that he helped
right.
Mm-hmm.
establish or attempt to establish this, he's not here to provide any
background.
Background.
So that sounds like good reason to table, and so I'm going to move to table this motion, so that Xavier can perhaps talk to us next time, and we can have some time to digest the question of what legal constraints might limit.
I would second that.
All in favor of tabling?
Aye.
Yeah, aye.
Aye. Any opposed? That motion is tabled.
Other revisions.
Were there any other recommendations?
We had a few. We have a few, and I have tried. Members of the board will have received a version of this already. I'm going to pass out what I hope will be a more usable discussion, because we can actually make it easier to put motions on the floor. So this is an update on something you will already have received. And I'll, for the purpose of people who are attending who won't have seen the previous things, this has to do with the PERF statement of best practices in use of force, that is the Police Executive Research Forum's recommendations. And in a general, what the idea is to bring our policies into closer alignment with those standards. But to operationalize that, we need to have more particulars. And so what I've just handed out to you, and I've listed it as six recommendations so that we can consider them separately, is operationalizing some things that would bring us closer to the PERF standards. Now, as with so many things that are, in a sense, interconnected, we could take it all at once, but I feel we might be more comfortable by spending a little time in dealing with each one and deciding whether we're comfortable, because there are some that we might not be. So the first thing, and again, this also reflects some comments by members of the public when we had our public meeting about the policy 300. You notice how bad my typing was today. It's not section 3000. I promise you it's section 300. In the discussion with the public, we talked about how the question of de-escalation was buried pretty deeply in the use of force policy. It's in section 300, but it isn't. It's particularly prominent. So recommendation number one is simply a retitling. So response to retitle our use of force section as response to resistance, comma, de-escalation, comma, and use of force. So it's clear that all those topics are going to be covered, and it's not just a use of force section. That strikes me as being relatively uncontroversial. So that one I'm going to just move, perhaps, that we recommend that retitling.
Do a vote on that, Rose?
I made a motion.
And I think
so. Then there'd be a second, and then a vote.
Okay. Do we have a second?
Second.
Diane seconds. All those in favor of amending the language?
Aye.
Aye.
Say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. That motion, recommendation one, is passed.
Now for clarity, it might be useful for members of the board, because this one has to do with section 300.1, which is the purpose and scope. And I will read it out just to hold things in our minds. The present wording is: the purpose of this policy is to provide officers of the Columbia Police Department with guidelines for the use of less lethal force or deadly force as a response to resistance or in carrying out law enforcement objectives. And once again, part of my concern there is the whole subject of de-escalation is not coming up at that point, right? We're going directly to a discussion of use of force. So here's the recommendation, which I'll read as a substitute for 301. The purposes of this policy are: A, to provide officers guidelines for safely dealing with individuals who are belligerent or who are armed. B, to provide officer guidelines for distinguishing between situations where de-escalation strategies are the appropriate response and those where use of force is necessary. C, to provide officer guidelines for responding to situations where use of less lethal force is appropriate. And D, to provide officer guidelines for recognizing situations where the use of deadly force is appropriate. So we're insisting that distinctions be made. And we're not just talking about use of force, you know, as though it were one thing and didn't involve questions of de-escalation and...
So it's a broader, more detailed explanation.
It's more detailed, yeah. And again, I reworded that comment a little bit after I talked to Ashley Heiberger, some of you will remember, he was a presenter on use of force at the NACO conference, and we had a good hour of discussion about all this just last week. The important things there are: that's recommendation three. So we're on recommendation two now. So, and again, that we're talking about what the scope of section three is, 300 is.
But
so before we move to recommendation three, do we want to do another voice vote?
I have a comment or
maybe a change, or I don't know what you want to say. On A, you have dealing with individuals who are belligerent or armed. I feel like it's more than that even. So I don't know how you would change that, but I mean, it could be because of mental health. It could be so many things I don't think it's just those two things, and I would hate to limit it to that.
You know, uncooperative.
Uncooperative would really cover. Why do we make it who are belligerent uncooperative?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, which
create,
I agree.
And I noticed on maybe where they create a substantial risk. I'm not sure what you want to use there. I was just looking through the policy on some of the terminology used, and under deadly force definition, it just says any force that creates a substantial risk of causing death. But I wonder if they're a risk somehow to the officer. I don't know. Yeah, it's more something more general.
Jamie, I'll just promise you that that's going to come up later on.
Okay.
That the question of the officers need to protect their own safety as well as the safety of the public. In fact, it really kind of comes up in the very next one.
Sure.
So, but to go to your first thing, so we're now saying dealing with individuals who are belligerent, uncooperative, or armed, right? Those are our categories.
That would be better off, yeah.
I agree. I think that. So I will accept that as a friendly amendment, as they say.
So, again, a voice vote.
I think that was all I had. So.
Second recommendation.
I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to keep track of all this.
One thing I can do is mark things that work. All we've done is to change this. So, uncooperative or.
That was it.
I think Jamie and I will work together on making sure that her thing is incorporated.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you. You might need that for a minute.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
So, is there a motion?
I'll move to make that recommendation.
Okay, do we?
Second?
Did we have a second? All those in favor say aye.
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 Oh, aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that's recommendation 2 is passed.
Okay, and again, I think it would be useful on recommendation 3 to look, although there's not the exact one-to-one correspondence here, to all sections, subsections of 300.5. It's really to A, okay? And again, this is the one where I had that conversation with Ashley Heibarger to deal exactly with the sort of thing that Jamie was talking about. There's some change in wording from what I initially sent out. So at present, it says under Section A, an officer shall use de-escalation techniques and other alternatives to higher levels of force consistent with such officer's training whenever possible and appropriate before resorting to force and to reduce the need for force, which is not bad. One of the things that the Police Executive Research Forum made clear in their documents was you need to make it clear that you're talking about what situations you're not dealing with. You know, when you're recommending de-escalation, you have to say from the first place, we're not talking about a situation where there's an immediate threat of death or serious injury to an officer or a citizen. We're not going to say, well, let's see what de-escalation strategies. So that's the part of the rewording, is just to make that clear. So here's the rewording suggested. Except in situations where an officer or a member of the public is threatened with serious and immediate injury, officers will attempt, if practical, to resolve situations by using de-escalation techniques rather than force. So trying to draw a clear line between the. And I think the key words here are serious and immediate injury, right? We're not talking about something bad might happen the next day, and we're not talking about trivial injury, but serious immediate injury, and again, either to officers or to members of the public. And I guess what we're asking the officers to say, am I faced with a situation where it's serious and immediate injury? If not, can I back off and think about de-escalation, right? That's So I think that's all I should say at this point about it. And I'll go ahead just to be sort of parliamentary and move the adoption of that recommendation, and then maybe people have some observations or.
I would second your motion.
All those in favor of recommendation number 3, say aye.
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 Any opposed? No.
Recommendation 4 may strike you as the weird one, but it struck me as really strange in a way. So 305.2B, after B on the page, that if you're looking at the page of use of force things, 305.2B, and then right after 304.2B, we have two items that just seem almost stuck in. Okay, so no, we have to read in the context. So here's what I'm not suggesting a change to any of this. Here's what B says before we get to the numbered things. To prevent the escape of a fleeing subject, okay, pardon me, an officer is authorized to use deadly force when it is objectively reasonable under the totality of the circumstances. Use of deadly force is justified when one or both of the following apply. A is to protect the officer or others, which is sort of what we were talking about before. But B is to prevent the escape of a fleeing subject when the officer has probable cause to believe that the person has committed or intends to commit a felony involving the infliction of serious bodily injury or death, and the officer reasonably believes that there is an imminent risk of serious bodily injury or death to any other person if the subject is not immediately apprehended. No objection to any of that. Now, I turn the page and see a 1 and 2. How it's connected is a little unclear. But one says, the person has a weapon or is attempting to access one, and it is reasonable to believe the person intends to use it against the officer or another. And I'm going, hold it, has a weapon or is attempting to access one. So they're going to go to they intend to go to the store to buy a weapon. They're looking for their keys because they think they might have a weapon in the garage. That seemed an odd thing about imminent. It seems to have gone away. And the second one is similar. The person is capable of causing serious bodily injury or death without a weapon, and it is reasonable to believe that the person intends to do so. I'm not seeing the same emphasis on an immediate threat when I see that. And that's my concern. Now, people may disagree with me on that and feel that there's a connection there that I'm not seeing.
So without a weapon, are you referring to without like a handgun or without what about a bat? What about a rock? Something they could use as a weapon, correct?
Right. Right. My concern is if I look at a person and say that person is capable of inflicting bodily injury without a weapon, therefore I'm going to use force on him, even though he's not anywhere near the weapon, you know, he's not holding a rock, but maybe he'll get a rock. He's not going after anybody, but he's a big physical guy, and he could go after somebody. I'm just missing from the language here the sense of that there has to be an immediate reason for the application of force. You know, it started with thinking about this intends, there's reasonably person has a weapon or is attempting to access one. How far do we take that? He might go over to the neighbor's house at any time and break in and get a weapon. Therefore, what? You know, I mean, where do we draw the line for what's imminent? And so that's my concern.
They're also basing it on the reasonable person standard, which is in the state laws.
Yeah, I can pass on this.
And I think some of that terminology is just because we don't necessarily know it, but this is coming from, you know, state standards and state laws on that.
Might be.
And you.
If people are uncertain about this one, I'm quite willing to pass on this one. But it's just it's a weird item to me.
I wouldn't mind having them like review it because I agree, like they have a one and two, but I don't understand why they have the one and two because nothing in A or B leads you to need a one or two.
Right.
So maybe something in there needs to be rewritten. I don't know what that is. So maybe the recommendation is just to review that section. And maybe that's what you're saying in your...
You know, how about this as a recommendation? I'm going to, and this is a little, I don't think it will confuse things very much. What if we were to say, because there's just confusion about the connection between the sections.
Yes.
If we merely recommend that items 1 and 2 following section 300.5.2b should be removed or rewritten. That's all we mean. We can't tell what it means at this point, so please either remove it or rewrite.
Not making complete sense.
So, Rose, that's just striking everything after the word.
I'm thinking that 1 and 2 go with B, but...
It's hard to match them up, really.
Just maybe reviewed.
Yeah. And it might just, the slightest rewording might make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
So now my motion is just to, that these section, these numbers, numbered items should be removed or rewritten. So there's the motion then.
Second.
Seconded. Jamie.
Okay, all those in favor of removing section one and two?
Removing or... Rewriting.
Or rewriting, thank you. Sections 1 and 2, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And aren't they going through a review of the policies and procedures?
As I understand it, they are. It's a lengthy process.
Is that correct?
Yes, sir.
Any idea when the expectation? Okay. So, in theory, a lot of this could be
right.
Struck. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, that was recommendation number 4, if I'm counting correctly. Let's see, recommendation number 5.
I feel like I need to apologize for the length of all this, but it's what I've been thinking a lot about.
A lot of good
about.
Work, Alan.
Yeah. And I will. You'll notice a comment not included at the end of recommendation 5 saying, here I'm not trying to give exact language to be written into the policy because I'm not sure that I'm qualified to do so, but it's a kind of a sense of things. And so I'll just read this out. I'll read the single sentence out, 313, which we've actually looked at already in this meeting. It says...
At least annually, officers will receive post-approved training on de-escalation.
And that's all that it says at this point. And again, this comes out of the context of those PERF recommendations. So I'm really, the language here is reflecting what PERF recommends. So here's, and again, this is a sense of what we might want to recommend rather than exact wording. But here's the recommendation. The single sentence on de-escalation training in section 300.13, second paragraph, should be expanded and revised so that CPD's training on de-escalation exceeds the minimal post standard. Training should be designed to simulate actual encounters with civilians who are hostile and resistant to commands, civilians who are mentally ill, and civilians who are armed with weapons other than guns, i.e., very much to your point, mm-hmm. knives, rocks, or clubs. De-escalation training should be integrated with training on use of less lethal and deadly force in a way that prepares officers to protect the lives of both the civilians involved and the lives of themselves and their fellow officers. So partly here it's let's not discuss de-escalation as a theoretical thing or a thing that we can describe in abstract terms without a simulation component where we actually show what it would mean for an officer to be confronting somebody who's got a knife and is this far away. You know, at what point does de-escalation become impossible? What does de-escalation look like here? At what point do you say, I'm not going to use deadly force, but I'm going to get out my pepper spray under these circumstances? And I would like to, the sense here is that we want to see the whole package, the de-escalation training, the less lethal force, the lethal force dealt with in practical policing situations rather than being merely discussed in abstract terms for 1 hour.
Yeah, 1 hour is not enough.
Now, I know that might run into, just for reasons that Sergeant German said, might run into scheduling problems and all sorts of other things, but I feel pretty strongly that we need to do a better job on the basis of what we're seeing. That is a motion. A motion that we recommend, recommendation number 5.
Expanding on the training? Expanding the training.
So you're saying here in your recommendation number 5 that if someone has a knife, that obviously de-escalation should be employed.
Possible.
But it doesn't necessarily rule out the use if they are.
Yep.
Okay.
And a huge part of the de-escalation training that PERF is recommending, and it's the ICAP model that we'll talk about in a minute, time, distance, cover, backup. What can I do here that's an alternative to taking this guy with the knife on? What other options are open to me? So that's, and sometimes there aren't other options open.
Correct.
At some point,
right.
There aren't other options right. open. But.
Second, okay, we have a second. So all those in favor of recommendation number 5, say aye.
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 Aye. Any opposed? Okay, recommendation 5 is passed.
This next one is, again, not a question of wording or even, in a sense, policy. And I will not be heartbroken if people are not willing to or feel this is a bridge too far, but I'll just go ahead and read it and we can discuss it. In order to ensure that CPD keeps abreast of the best practices in de-escalation, the board encourages the department to send selected members of the command and supervisory staff to receive fresh training via a nationally recognized program, such as that provided by the Integrated Communications Assessment and Tactics Training Center at Decatur, Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
As until the end of this year, at least, and maybe through next year, I'm not sure, this is being offered for free. And what they're really trying to do is get people who are training officers go to this institute where they go through the simulations, they have the real experts doing everything like that. Maybe impossible, given people's work schedule for them to get there, but man, it looks like a tremendously impressive program. And again, very hands-on, you know, pertinent to recommendation 5, where we say, let's look at the real stuff, confronting people. And so it's taking people through these simulations. So it'd be a good way to look at what a well-run simulation as part of training looks like. So
we're encouraging.
We're encouraging. We obviously can't require this to,
right.
But we can encourage them.
National Institute.
Oh.
I used to work there. Same thing. You apply for just fabulous high-level training, and it's all you got to do is apply for it, and bring you in, and sometimes they bring the program to you.
And that's another great one, and there may be other agencies that do the same thing.
So not exactly. Having the budget isn't necessarily an excuse right. not to do it.
Yeah,
but given the capacity or lack thereof,
time is an issue. There's no doubt about it. And so I think all we would be saying as a board is, man, if it's possible to do this, let's go for it.
Urging you to.
Yeah, maybe can I ask? And I don't remember the officer's name on the end. I'm sorry. But what's the police department doing now? I guess as far as keeping abreast of updated practices, procedures, and these kind of, is there already some of these items in place that Doug's kind of talking about, or
I don't think I'm familiar with the two programs that were mentioned, the one in Decatur and the one in Corrections. But I definitely wrote them down because I heard free.
So. Exactly, yeah.
That's always attractive.
Yeah, right.
And then the only constraint you have is time.
Right.
Because payroll's already going to be taken care of.
How does the police department keep up with the most current training, or how do they get those resources, or is there like...
The training and recruitment unit is pretty good about sending out emails, hey, this is training that's on our radar, and not just free training, but, you know, this is good training, this has been recommended to us. That's the first thing that comes to mind, is the training and recruitment unit is really good about sending that out to all the members.
How do they get that information? Is there some, like, national, I don't know how that works, like...
I don't know either.
Police education that, like, comes down the chain, or...
Yeah, well, I know, just personally speaking, you know, when I've attended training, that always puts my name on a list, and I'm always getting, my inbox is always getting, hey, come to this training, and a lot of it's good. Mm-hmm. So I can only speak for myself, and I would think probably a lot of my coworkers are getting the same emails.
Gotcha.
So. Okay.
Very well. So do we need a motion for number?
Yeah, I'm going to move that we endorse recommendation 6, which again is to encourage the department.
Right.
To get training of this sort, right?
So Doug's mm-hmm. made the motion. Do we have a second?
I second that.
Diane has a second. All those in favor of recommendation 6, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? And 6 carries. Very nice.
I would like to say, and just real quick, that I know we've been talking about recommendations and all this for de-escalation. I would like to just note that I feel like we need to see if they can make that training more of a priority. Of all the different types of training that law enforcement go through right now with mental health crisis, de-escalation needs to be absolutely on the top of that list.
Is that a motion for a recommendation?
Can you second to catch up?
Yeah.
Hold on. Okay, now I'm ready.
Yeah.
Do we need a motion for Stephanie's recommendation?
Or are you going to all agree on by consensus?
I agree.
I think ideally we'll put it at the top of the list.
Yes.
That's what you said, right? Okay, so future of outreach subcommittee.
So this was on last month, and it could be passed again to next month if you'd like. But basically, you have an outreach subcommittee that exists with a membership of 4 that has a membership of 2. So the choices are either to have 2 additional members volunteer to fill those empty slots, or do nothing, in which case that group can't ever meet because they don't have a quorum.
Mm-hmm.
Or you could just dissolve it and figure you're going to do outreach as a full board and not have a subcommittee.
Well, again, given our limited space here tonight, do we want to discuss this, or should we table it until we're all at full staff? Any thoughts?
Who are the 2? Are you on that subcommittee?
I was on the subcommittee
and
now.
Brandon?
Yeah. It was Cheryl, I believe, and Rhonda,
yeah,
who are no longer,
no longer.
And
right.
Then Brandon and myself.
Right.
And I think since we were added, we have never met. We had never met.
You never met?
Correct.
Oh, okay. And
It's outreach, and part of that was deciding what events that the board would engage with. For example, the over the summer they have the Juneteenth parade, and so we were a participant in that, and we did a booth downtown. Again, trying to allow and get the community to know that we exist and who we are and what we do, but not only there, but at a few other functions as well. And I can't think of, my time is limited here on the board, so I don't know beyond that, Rose, do you have any recollection of other events?
I think they would do some speaking organizations they were parts of. At one point, they were working on a brochure or flyer. Board in the whole time it's existed. Sometimes it's head of an outreach subcommittee, and sometimes it doesn't. And it just really depends upon the preference of the board. It can be that the full board takes it up, like they do some of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you would rather have the outreach subcommittee come up with ideas and bring them to the full board, that can happen as well. It's just right now they're under their quorum level of members, so there's...
So first of all, we need to decide if we want to continue with it, and if so, we need two more appointees to the board, correct?
To the subcommittee, yes.
To the subcommittee, correct.
If you want to continue with it. If you don't want to continue with it, you could pass a motion to dissolve it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to just table it till there's more people here, that can happen as well.
Yeah, I think in the interest of the full board, I'm sorry, I would prefer to table it, but...
Is there that much activity involved? I feel that we can absorb. You know what I mean?
I think in my limited time on this board, there hasn't been a lot of issues at all. So either we do it collectively as a group or not. But I mean, I have my thoughts on it. But again, in fairness to the full board, perhaps we should table it.
I would table it.
That's
fine.
I'm fine with tabling it.
So if we could table that until next meeting.
Yeah.
So. And then we have review of policies 300, 306, 440, and 447.
I didn't know if there was anything more on this topic since you had all your recommendations up above.
I don't have any.
Sounds good to me, but.
No.
And then the next item is the planning for the work session. So I checked with Samantha today, and basically she had sent out the doodle poll for January and February.
Mm-hmm.
And y'all are very busy people because you don't have a lot of availability. The most we could find, there were 2 days where there were 6 people. My concern with that is it's January and right around the holidays, so weather and the possibility of dropping down below your quorum and having to cancel when you're having food brought in. So if you're agreeable, we'll probably just send a new doodle poll for like February, March, and see
Where that goes, how that goes.
And the thing that I was having the most struggle with it is there were so many. I'm at 5:00, and I am still working at 5:00.
I can tell her to.
That's why I was like 6:00 work. Mm-hmm. I could come any day at 6:00.
Or you could do like the meal from 5:30 to 6:00 with the meeting starting at 6:00. Yeah. So if you do have to come a little late, you're not missing the actual meeting or something like that.
Like, which one do I pick?
I didn't realize she really sent out that start
there were
time,
5:30 and 6:00 times. But then that second set, all the sixes were pretty well gone. And I'm like, Well, that's the one I can do.
So new doodle poll, is that correct?
Yeah, I'll have her send a new doodle poll with 6 p.m. start times when rooms are available in February and March.
Okay. Wonderful. New business.
Oh, I think there were audits. I don't know if anybody has any standard audits.
Pardon me?
I don't believe there are any new audits.
I don't believe we have any new audits, yeah.
My group reviewed some, like 3 or 4, but we haven't all gotten together to review them. You know, we've each kind of done our own with them, but we haven't really talked about them since Cheryl left, so.
And then kind of related to this, I talked to a few of you about whether or not there'd be a closed session, but I didn't know from the others if there was any reason for closed session tonight.
I don't believe so.
Okay, perfect. Now you're on new business.
New business? New business? Anybody have new business? aside from the NACOL conference. Yeah, Reese and I attended the NACOL conference in lovely Chicago, and it was a very interesting 4 days, 5 days. I think at the end of the day, it was, again, about kind of perspective. I was able to meet a number of individuals from Miami to Philadelphia to New York. I met some counterparts in Kansas City, Seattle, LA, San Francisco, and so Baltimore. It was just very interesting talking and getting a feel of, you know, what they're dealing with. And really one of the takeaways that I had was, you know, we're certainly not perfect here, and I think everyone would admit to that, but from my limited time on this board, what I see is far, far better, far superior in terms of practice and how things are operating than a lot of places, a lot of different communities with individuals with whom I'd spoken. So again, it was very interesting. I did bring the book. If anyone wants to look at it, this was kind of the annual conference. What was interesting, they had various breakout sessions. So each day there were probably 3 or 4 different hour and a half, 2 hour venues. They'd have a break and you can go to various meeting rooms and things of that sort. So very interesting. They did have a panel one day from the Department of Justice out of DC, which they were interesting to listen to. But anyway, I found it overall, again, very large on that perspective and ultimately being thankful for what we have here in the city of Columbia. So, any questions on that from anyone? It was.
I wanted to go so bad, and then I last minute.
I think next year it's going to be in Tucson, I believe. So maybe you'll have a little warmer weather than we had in Chicago. Although it wasn't bad, I must say. So.
It just shows that the more cities, states that are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Very nice. Okay, so let's see. Review of preliminary draft 2023 annual report.
If you all could take your time and go through it and see if you have any changes and send them to me before the next meeting, that would be great, because then we can update the preliminary draft. You have to approve the draft you have to approve the annual report and send it to council by March 1st. So the latest approval date would be your February meeting.
So we'll vote on that
next time, potentially, next time. Okay. Unless people see other changes, in which case it would be February.
Okay, very well. And then a review of preliminary items for next month's agenda.
So next month, as a special item, Chief Jill Schlute will be here to meet with you all. Under old business, what I have so far is review of the police policies, planning for work session on police policy 447, audits, Reese's report on the NACOL conference, review of the draft 2023 annual report. Under new business, items for next month's agenda, and then reports, Human Rights Commission, positive connections, training and ride-alongs. Does anyone have anything else at this point?
Rose, did you say election of officers? I don't know if I heard that.
Oh, I didn't say. Oh, good. And then outreach subcommittee too, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, so we're on number 10 now, Rose?
Nine.
Number nine reports. Okay, Human Rights Commission. We're lacking, correct?
Have we heard anything about a new possible?
They have not appointed anyone.
Well, so come, yeah.
Mm.
So eventually they're either going to have to appoint someone or they'll likely send a report to council saying they're not going to report any, not going to appoint anyone, in which case then council could decide whether they're going to continue to have the Human Rights Commission appoint or whether council will appoint.
Okay. Positive connections, training, ride-alongs. Anyone have anything to report?
I actually do, and it's very much a positive connection. There's a North Central Neighborhood Association that has been having their Neighborhood Association meetings at Wilkes Boulevard Methodist Church, which, as many of you know, is a center for homeless services in town very much. And at the last meeting, which I think was about 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, my calendar sense is terrible, Joe Sluti and Lance Bollinger, is that the
Bollinger?
Bollinger, yeah. Both appeared at the meeting and were very useful in discussion of a number of items there. And I subsequently heard via the Neighborhood Association, who had heard it via Jill, that they're contemplating now, there has been a policy of having one officer on the Columbia Police Department is appointed as the homeless liaison officer. They're now talking about upping that to two and linking the homeless liaison officers as closely as possible to co-responders, which is something we've been talking about a great deal. So I feel really good about a robust discussion about interactions between the police department and the homeless. And right now, that was before Jill became chief, so now we've got friends at the top in terms of dealing with that.
I did my ride-along.
Ah.
I'd done one before because I used to be a parole officer, so I did one, you know, like 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
But it was great. The officer that I rode with was just... local kid, you know, and he explained how they, you know, the 10 sectors and how it all works, and we had a domestic violence call, and fire overnight, now it's stolen, you know,
yeah,
come
right.
And help me, cops, you know, and, you know, and so, yeah, so it was very nice. It went by really fast, and I thought he was so patient.
If you could try and talk into the microphone.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, and can't hear me? And I thought he was so patient, and really much more patient. I would be like, all right, let's get this moving, and he was really, you know, so, yeah, I enjoyed it.
What was the date?
I went.
If you could just email me, I'll make
okay.
Sure it's in the annual report.
All right, so you check me
was
out.
It a full shift, or do you remember?
I asked to go from 8 to midnight, but no. I went from 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah. But it was really informative, you know. I thought about how the police work, and we had a good variety.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you for that. Okay, now we're on to number 10, general comments by public members and staff. And then I will say individual members of the public will be allowed 3 minutes to address the board. Representatives of a group will be allowed 5 minutes to address the board. That said, welcome.
Jones, I would like my 5 minutes representing Hold Como Accountable. I will give the Human Rights Commission report because I was there. I've actually attended the last two. And for reasons, the room has actually been packed the last 2 months, which is absolutely lovely. This last meeting, they had a representative from Love, Inc. Talking about the vouchers and how landlords, one of the things they brought up is landlords are not following the new ordinance. And they found that landlords still have bad policies that contradict the ordinances on their websites, and telling people bad things. So they're trying to figure out how to make it so that landlords will actually do it. They talked about the sanctuary city, where it will become a trans sanctuary city, which would basically put where, like, trans people going into restrooms would be the last priority, things that are trans issues. Police department keeps saying that they don't have enough officers, so if it's last priority, it's not going to be taken care of, and we're pro that. And they talked about the inclusionary policy, which is about newer housing and developments having a certain percentage actually be for lower income people. They found several communities across the U.S. who have done that, so they're looking to see if that's something that could be implemented in Columbia. There will be a listening session in March. They will. They're thinking about the second, but they have to talk, or the second Saturday, sorry, I think, which is the 9th, but they will have to check on availability of rooms. Pat Fowler and then I brought something up, and then I had discussed it in the previous one, and there's multiple people. We talked about the need for 24/7 restrooms with running water, so not just porta potties, in areas where that are frequented by unhoused individuals. They found that unhoused individuals are having to use the restroom in people's yards, which is causing people to call the police, which is because they don't have something that should be covered under civil rights. So if we actually had restrooms that are available 24/7, that would actually cause less police needed to deal with homeless issues and actually guarantee the civil rights of basic human rights of unhoused individuals. That's all I have on the HRC. I want to go back though to the de-escalation tonight. Kim German had said that, you know, that post only requires 1 hour, that's all they need, we don't really have enough time, but what she didn't say was is that they actually have hours that are not designated. They are, you can do basically whatever you want. They've got a list of things and you can do whatever you want. They could up the number of hours, and then they would just have less extracurricular hours, basically. So I found that not quite truthful. Electives, that's the word I was looking for. There's an officer named Ryan, or sorry, a trainer named Ryan Dowd. He has been training police officers all across the U.S., so he should be post-certified. I've attended several of his trainings online, and they do have components where people can actually do the interactive part, so I would highly recommend that. People who have not seen it in the news, Fayette made really bad news this past week. A citizen found that police had dumped evidence bags that included prescription drugs and illegal substances, that also included sensitive information about victims, perpetrators, and officers in a public dumpster, in a dumpster behind a grocery store. From the news report that I saw, looks like their aldermen are basically trying to sweep it under the rug. Columbia police officers have done stuff that's equally egregious.
15 seconds.
Whenever you see people like me and Renee coming up here to talk about things, this is what we're trying to avoid. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am.
What was the name of that trainer?
Ryan Dowd, R-Y-A-N, last name D-O-W-D. You're welcome.
Hi.
Hello, my name is Zoe Hellman and I'm with the Columbia Missourian. I just wanted to go over a couple things from the meetings just to fact check really quick. So the current vacancies on the board are the HR liaison, chair, and are you serving as VP board member, Jeffrey?
There is only one vacancy on the board.
Okay.
Three people are excused absence tonight.
Oh, I just mean in general for like the term limits, because I know that board member Ellis, his term for chair is set to end on the 13th, correct? Like today? Or was someone else elected as chair?
They passed the election of officers to next month.
Okay, got it. And I just had another question about the recommendation process. Does the board, on like a rolling basis, provide recommendations to CPD, or are they all just accumulated towards the end in that annual report?
Once they pass a motion, the board chair sends a letter to the police chief and the city manager with the recommendations in it, and then they're also then in the annual report at the end.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I see no more questions. So, motion to go into closed session. We've talked about that. We don't have any closed session items this evening, so we'll punt on that. I guess the next meeting date is set for Wednesday, January 10th, 2024.
Motion to adjourn? That much, yeah.
You have a motion to adjourn? Anyone else? Second?
I'll second.
Second? All in favor of adjournment, say aye.
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 Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Okay, we are adjourned.